Welcome and thank you for tuning in. My name is Eva Lianne and you're listening to Maritime Unity Talks. Today we will talk with Anna Woeker on holistic psychology. Please join this conversation as we explore the interconnectedness of mind, body, trauma, mental problems, childhood, and a lot more, and discover how healing on multiple levels can reconnect us with our authentic selves. Hi, Anna. Welcome. Could you please introduce yourself to the audience a little bit?
I can. Hello, everyone. Hi, Eva-Lianne. Thanks for having me. Yeah, so my first name is Anna. My second name, as you've probably heard, is a horrible German name that no one can pronounce except German. I have grown up and was born and bred in Namibia in Southern Africa, probably a country that many people have never heard about. My academic background is in clinical psychology and neuropsychology, and I spent about the last 3 years working in the maritime sphere on various levels of psychological support, crisis support, conducting training on topics like mental health and resilience for employees within the maritime sphere. But most recently, I've actually gone into private practice. So I now have my own coaching studio where I focused mostly on working with adult individuals. And a lot of them are suffering from anxiety. A lot of them are suffering from depression. And one of the most common threads I find is that much of what they have experienced is connected to their childhood. So also just from my own personal history, I am also someone who has had suffered from depression and anxiety really badly. It got so bad at a stage that I would even consider it suicidal. So it's also something that's deeply personal to me. And I think despite studying 6 years of psychology, it was this personal journey that really got me going into the understanding our childhood and all of the things that lead to depression and anxiety. So that's something that I'm deeply passionate about and that I help and guide people with nowadays, yeah, through my own coaching and counseling sessions. So I think that's me in a nutshell.
Thank you. Thank you for letting us know. And also thank you very much for being part of the show today. And I look very much forward to the episode we're going to make. So before we start, I just wanted to say that if anything that we spoke about today feels like it resonated with you as a listener or brought up feelings or memories that make you feel uncomfortable, please know that there are many professional health professionals like Anna that are available for you. That's important to say also, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
So let's dive in, because today we're going to talk about trauma. Could you please start by explaining a little bit about the definition of trauma, maybe?
Yeah, sure. I think we all have a little bit of an idea of what we think trauma is. In the most common sense, we understand that it is some type of experience that we had maybe recently or long time ago that has been very traumatic for us, very distressing, very disturbing. And that is definitely true. So it's really how our body responds to something that is experienced as deeply distressing. What I think the definition of trauma doesn't quite incorporate well enough is that if we think about it, we think of the more active parts of trauma. So something that happens to us, so various forms of abuse, for example, so verbal abuse or physical or even sexual abuse, whether that's in childhood or in adulthood, or that expands to one-time events such as natural disasters or a car accident, or even bigger topics such as are currently going on if there's war and terror. Those are all experiences that can be deeply traumatic for us, but they're really something that happens to us. So it's more of an active thing. And I think something that was absolutely essential in my own journey is really understanding that there's a second part of trauma that is not really spoken about so much. And even in the psychological field, I find that this is not really a topic that's so openly discussed. And that second part is neglect and the traumatic effect that neglect has. And it's important to understand that something like abuse, again, there's someone that does it to us. There's an action involved. with neglect, it's almost no action and it's disengagement, it's disconnection. So it's almost like the absence of action that is involved. However, the effects and the traumatic long-term sort of consequences that this can have on us when it happens in childhood are almost deeper than what abuse can have on us. And I think a lot of the stuff that we talk about is much more focused on the abuse than on the trauma part of it, without thinking about the effects of neglect and how that can impact our lives. And there as well, similar to abuse, we have various levels of neglect. So there can be physical neglect. So if we're thinking in terms of childhood, a child that doesn't have food, that doesn't have clothes, that doesn't have articles of hygiene, so toothbrushes, for example, maybe they don't have the right material to be able to go to school, or they don't have the opportunity to go to school in general. So physical neglect is a big one. To my own journey, what was the most sort of aha moment was how much emotional neglect also affected my journey. So that was really in terms of, I went to boarding school. So when I was 6 years old, I was basically taken away from home or given away from home. And I had a lovely childhood. My parents were really just doing the best. So it really wasn't in any way that they didn't love me or they didn't support me and they didn't want the best for me as a child. But if you look at it from the perspective of a child, there's a lot of support and guidance and nurturing and encouragement that you miss out on if you're away from home during that time. So I think that also to understand the impact of emotional neglect, it's huge, especially when it comes to relationships. Yeah, so I think the definition of trauma is understood, but the impact of neglect, and that is also something that can cause deep and long-term trauma within our lives, is something that we really need to expand more on and have more conversations on and create more awareness on. Because a lot of people, including myself, when they learn that they're suffering from anxiety or from depression, there's almost this, but why? I never had any trauma. I was never abused. I didn't lack anything. I had a good education. I had a stable home. So why am I still suffering from this illness? And I think a lot of the times working with myself, working with my clients, the reason is it's more found in the neglect sphere and not so much in the abuse sphere. So I think that's really interesting that we should add that to the definition of trauma, is that neglect forms a big part of it as well. Yeah.
Yes. And thank you for mentioning this, because I'm sure that is an eye-opener for more people, hopefully. Yeah. Because you easily forget. You're focusing so much on comparing yourself with others. And I think when you talk about physical neglect, especially for myself, also I live in the Netherlands, so everything is there. All shops are filled with everything you need. And I think most children in the country where I live have everything available to them, like physically, but emotionally, that is a totally different story. Maybe you can explain if this is also relating to the feeling of being unseen or the feeling of being not able to be yourself like fully sometimes. Is that the same as feeling as neglect?
Yeah, emotional neglect can be understood on various levels. But I think to summarize it, it's really that the parents or the primary caregivers and the caretakers that are part of the immediate environment for the child, that can also be grandparents, that can be siblings, that can be babysitters, that can be kindergarten teachers. The people who have access to the child in the first, let's say, 3 to 5 years, those are the people that really have a huge impact on how that child develops on a social and on an emotional level. An emotional neglect can be really harsh, but there can be also small nuances, such as if parents are not able to, and I'm not saying they're not willing, but some of this is really intergenerational trauma. So if you haven't had the capacity, if you haven't had the path onto you from your parents, it's going to be really difficult for you to have that skill to pass onto your children. If I, as a parent, was not taught how to really attune my emotional level to that of my child, In basic terms, that means if my child is crying, that I soothe my child, that I'm able to tune into that mental and emotional state of the child. And really, instead of being like, oh, get over it, I just fed you. You have everything what you need. Why are you complaining? Why are you crying? And we discussed this before in a private conversation, but some of the sort of parenting approaches, they just let the child cry. It'll cry itself out immediately. While, yes, maybe after 20 minutes, the child will stop crying, the child will also have received the message that if I express my needs, they will not be met. And if this happens on a continuous basis, the child will eventually stop expressing those needs and it's going to adapt, but it's going to have that belief imprinted in its brain that my needs do not matter. And that is something that sticks with you into adulthood, into all your relationships. So 20 years along the line, if that's a young adult, it's possible for them to end up in a relationship where they are worried about expressing their needs. They might not know what their needs are because they've just been suppressed so deeply. So that they end up with a partner who abuses them, manipulates them, uses them. And that is obviously in no way healthy. So really, how the parents react to the emotional state of the baby, of the child, paves the way for how that social interaction is going to be imprinted long-term into other relationships.
Yeah, so true, I think. And thank you so much for explaining this, because I think also a lot of people might think of themselves that they're not able enough to do this. But in fact, if you never learned, how can you expect to know everything? You cannot know everything. You have to learn and you have to know about it.
Yeah.
So if you know about how the spectrum of emotions and how to name them, how to define them, they can also help somebody else with that. So you can just very simply say, hey, I see that you are, like, from my observation, I can see that you look sad or angry or happy or whatever emotion that might be. And then the other person has the space to say what he or she needs. And then, so it's super simple, but if you don't know it, then you don't know it. So thank
Absolutely.
You for explaining.
Absolutely. I think...
Oh, sorry.
Sorry. No, I was just going to say, I think this is really something that is passed on from generation, and someone has to be the first generation to stop it, to stop the cycle and to really delve into and do the work in terms of, this is what happened to me and I know my parents were doing their best with what tools they had and with the knowledge that they had. But especially in our day and age, there is so much knowledge out there. There are so many therapists out there who are focusing more and more on these topics. So it's really something you can access now. And it's not just beneficial for your children. It's really beneficial for yourself in all of your relationships, romantic relationships, friendships, professional relationships, and most importantly, the relationship with yourself. Because very often that is the one relationship that is most damaged. And that leads to depression. That leads to anxiety. That leads to suicide, because we just are completely disconnected with ourselves. So any work that you put into yourself is definitely going to benefit the relationships that you have in your life, in whatever area that is. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think before we are going to finalize the topics that we talk about today, I just wanted to pop in a little extra question, because what you just said, I think, is really very important, that the most important relationship you have in your entire life is with yourself. And that's the relationship people should value more than anything, because it's very important. But what I notice sometimes is that people assume that this is actually narcissistic to have, to focus on yourself, to love yourself. And then I'm so amazed by it, because it is not. It is entirely the opposite. So could you please explain a little bit more about how that actually is?
Yeah, I think there in itself, I'm probably going to sound like a broken record over time. But for me, I still find the source of that in childhood, but also in our society. So if you are growing up in an environment where your job as a child is to meet the needs of your parents, you have to be the good child. You have to be the quiet child. You have to be the child that is always happy and easygoing. You're not allowed to have needs. If you throw a temper tantrum, if you're angry, for example, you're punished for it. If you complain about something, no one listens to you. They just say it's a small issue, get over it, move on. It's not anything that is supported. It's not anything that's heard and listened to. So if we get this message again and again, your needs don't matter, your feelings don't matter, no one is going to listen to them, it feels really difficult at some stage then to even have needs, because we've been told you're not allowed to have needs. Your job is to meet other people's needs. If mom is unhappy, me as a child, I am not allowed to be angry because my job is to make mom happy. And if I've learned that how I make mom happy is by being helpful, doing my homework, sitting in my room quietly, not complaining, not wanting to play, not wanting any attention, not doing anything that might make mom unhappier, then I'm going to do that as a child because I depend for survival on that relationship. So I adapt. In my mind, that means that the focus of care and love is always going to be externalized. So what I need to do is make sure that other people are happy in order for myself to feel happy. When you're then put in an environment where you're suddenly bombarded with this, oh, but it's so important to self-care and self-love and all of this, it feels weird because for the first time you're being confronted with this thought and this almost sort of marketing campaign where you're now supposed to suddenly take care of yourself. If you haven't been taught to do that your entire life, that's going to feel selfish. There's going to be a lot of guilt attached to that because who am I to take care of myself? My job is to take care of other people. The classical presentation of this is people pleasing. Saying yes to someone, which also incorporates saying no to you. If someone asks you, can you do this for me? And actually you don't have time, but you say yes to anyone. You're saying yes to someone, but you're saying no to yourself. So it's really that switch of externalizing validation to meeting other people's needs to make ourselves feel better. And that switch is really difficult to move around because it's taken so many years of imprinting that in our brains. And that's where we get our validation from. So if we suddenly now want to start taking care of ourselves, that feels weird. It feels selfish. It feels egocentric. It feels difficult. It feels challenging. And it definitely feels very uncomfortable because guilt and shame and those really deeply seated emotions come up. So it's really not easy to do.
Yeah, and that's so thank you so much for explaining this so clearly, because it makes a lot of sense. And I think basically what it comes down to is the difference between empathy and compassion then. So I think when you have empathy for another person, then you have the ability to just dissolve yourself completely to empathize with another, because you make the other person so big, you can empathize so big with the other people's feelings that you completely lost yourself, or you lose your own needs and your own existence, maybe even.
Yeah.
And compassion is, at least that's what I learned, compassion is when you have empathy, but with remaining yourself also. So that means your heart-mind connection needs to be very strong.
Yeah.
Especially when people are suffering really badly, you really have to be strong in your own person and have compassion for first for yourself and then for the other people, for the other person, like in an airplane, right? First your own oxygen mask and then of your child or anybody who's sitting next to you. Yeah. Thank you for explaining. And then because we try to keep these episodes a little bit short, but don't worry if you're listening, we are making a few other ones, so please stay tuned. But before we end, I would just like to really quickly ask you, what are the effects of this, what we talked about, and how does it show up in your daily thoughts, beliefs, actions, and relationships?
I think the short answer is it shows up everywhere. Because it's such an integral part, how we feel mentally, it affects our mental health. It affects our physical health. It affects our beliefs. It affects how we cope with stress. It affects how we make decisions. It affects how we deal with conflict. It affects how we choose our partners and how we act within our relationships. We've spoken about it, how it affects how we bring up our children. So I really think there is no area that it doesn't affect. If we have these experiences from childhood, then they're absolutely going to be present in our adult lives. The good thing is that because we are now adults, we get to make a choice about how we deal with them. As a child, you are dependent on your caregivers. So it's not that you can be like, you guys are not treating me well, bye, I'm walking out the door. That's not how it works. And just on the level of brain development as well, kids and adolescents are not consciously aware of these processes happening. This really only happens when you're in your mid-20s or 30s or 40s, when you really look back and start digging in your childhood, that you have the capacity and the brain that is developed fully to be able to observe these patterns. And even in some of my clients, it takes a lot of like coaxing for them to admit, yeah, actually my childhood wasn't so perfect. And there were actually things that my parents did that were deeply hurtful, even if I didn't mean to, but there were actually some things that hurt. And I'm suffering from those today. So they really affect the development of the brain. They affect how we feel. They affect our nervous system. There really isn't an area that it doesn't affect. But as I said, as adults, we get to make a choice. This is where I am today. I can understand now why I am here today. And I can make a conscious choice. Is this how I would like to live tomorrow? And if the answer is no, there are really good, concrete and practical steps that you can take every day to reconnect with the child that you are deep inside. And really bring out that authentic version of yourself and not the conditioned version. And I think that is the step that will take care of a lot of mental illnesses, a lot of unfulfillment, dissatisfaction, feeling lost, feeling confused, feeling unhappy. It's because we're disconnected from that child and from our authentic selves. So establishing and rebuilding that connection is something that I feel one can make an active choice to do. And it's the biggest step in the direction of freedom that you will ever take, in my opinion. So absolutely worthwhile and very necessary.
Thank you so much. And so we're going to round up this episode, but I hope we will make many more episodes because I think it's so important to talk about these things and share it also with everybody out there. Also, of course, we hope that you enjoyed listening to our show as an audience. And when you find this information valuable, please feel free to share it with your friends and network and family. And if you have any insights or remarks you wanted to share, please share it. Let us know in the comments below so that we can also see it and respond. I hope you will join us for the next one.